pursue services at some extent. And I want to define that very clearly for you. It could be that we have helped them to get their food stamp card. It can be that we have helped them to fill out an application for a housing unit. It could be that we helped them to get a cell phone. But each one of those is a success. Each one of those is a step to someone getting into stable housing. But it starts with something simple. It starts with all of that. And so there are folks that absolutely have come on site and used the meal program for a year. Absolutely, no doubt about that. But each one of them has engaged with other services well on site and had conversations with our team. Our team is aware of them, is starting to get to know them, to build that relationship and to have that conversation with every single person that comes on site.
You mentioned the partnership with the police department. Are you aware, and maybe this is a question for the chief, are you aware if an individual is, let's say, repeatedly cited for violating any particular city ordinance and then, in other words, creating a problem in the neighborhood, and then are you aware of that at all so that you might, that might be an issue in terms of whether or not a person is denied? So, Chief, do you ever inform them? I imagine you don't, but I'm just asking to be clear. If individuals are, let's say, repeat citations for
We don't have a formal way in which we notify them of all the citations that we've issued for the various municipal codes that we may do so. However, you know, with the, you know, I try not to use the word to say I echo what you say because it's fun, but as Austin has mentioned, we the connection and the teamwork that we have with Echo is something that has absolutely helped us, because a lot of times we don't have the ability, especially on a low-level misdemeanor, to have somebody booked into jail. We just don't have that availability.
Right.
Echo provides us a resource that can us, because what our goal is to take care of whatever that issue is on the criminal level. But this partnership that we have with them allows us the opportunity to have another choice besides booking somebody, and that's worked out really well for us. The individuals that we run into that are continuous problems, that are resource resistant, well, we've done everything that we can with Echo's help to try to get them the help that they need. And sometimes, as Austin mentions, we see that these small steps that they take and these successes that they get lead them down a road that they eventually will take these resources. So we've seen these successes as well. But as far as like to answer your question, with the partnership that we have and having meetings on a weekly basis with them, we, you know, word of mouth, we verbalize what we've come across and what our what we've noticed and what is on our radar that they should be aware of. So we verbalize those things in our meetings.
Okay, so I mean, I'm looking at it from the perspective of, let's say, a neighbor who has a continuous, constant problem with a couple of individuals, whether or not, you know, there's a sharing of information between you two so that Echo knows that's a problem child who's creating a real problem in the neighborhood. So it sounds like, just through the workings of the R team, that there would be a mutual awareness.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that that's the one of the advantages of having our teams. Now we have some individuals within the police department that are specifically aware of the problems that won't go away, and they can give it the special attention that it needs. Whereas without the our team, now we have patrol officers who may not be aware, who come to a call for service, never been in connection with this individual, doesn't know the background. So we try to focus the our team toward these issues, so that we have a background with the individual and know what can be done to help with that situation.
Got it. Okay, thank you, Chief. And on the meals, or the number of meals, you know, expanding the facility, so you're going to need more overall meals. But I think, I mean, just in general, concerns of from the community have never really centered around the overnight residents, because of the rules you have in place for the overnight residents. That the concerns have always centered around the non-housed individuals who are attracted, you know, and are naturally going to hang around in the vicinity, because, you know, why would you walk 5 miles, you know, to the other end of town and walk 5 miles back at mealtime? So it's a natural, we, you know, through our approvals of these processes have you know, centered this issue in one neighborhood of our town. And so my question to you is, would you see it as a problem if we said, you know, you can always feed any resident, but that the number of meals you can serve is limited to the number of, or is based on serving non-residents?
To answer your question, at the end of the day, we are public servants. We are at the will of the community, and what the community decides, we will move forward on. But I will tell you, as a member of ECHO's team and as someone who has worked in homeless services for past 10 years, I believe that would be a mistake. I believe that you would be creating opportunities, you would be diminishing opportunities to connect with people about services, and would, in my mind, in my purview, in my expertise, truthfully diminish the success that we see through some of our programs.
Okay, thank you. And last question, do you guys serve meals in Paso?
Yes, we do.
You do. Okay, what's your number there?
It ranges, it's a little bit higher. We do have 70 beds at that location, and so we do see on a nightly basis, I think that number is about 95 currently at our Paso location.
And do you have a similar conditions of approval with the city of Paso Robles?
It's very different. We don't have a cap on the meal number there whatsoever.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. A couple of technical questions. Let's get those through. One is in the operating standards, we see that on page 29 of the packet. They specify that your staffing is on a 1-to-30 ratio of either staff or volunteers to overnight guests. Will ECHO be expanding overnight staffing with the new things to maintain that kind of ratio to assure the community that the shelter continues to be well supervised?
Absolutely. Yes, we would be increasing our staff levels to accommodate the new build out and the new capacity concerns as well.
Great. And then I want to thank you for commenting at some length earlier about the shower hours. That's something that I was hearing from people, the concern about the interface from people who are coming early to ECHO to try to get into line to get their shower, and high school students who are coming out of school. So I was wondering, given your comments, if I were to later offer an amendment to the language in the operating plan that is proposed about the shower program, that would preserve the new total of 15 hours a week, also specify that the start time would not be before 4 p.m. or routinely on school days. Would that be acceptable to ECHO?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we heard with the high school principal, is that earlier shift would potentially have more cross traffic during that busy time. And so that's when we definitely said, yeah, 4 o'clock works for us. We have it posted 4 to 5:30, as Austin mentioned earlier, but we, within our 10 hours a week in our current use permit, we can go till up to 6 o'clock if there's a need. If there's a couple people, and it's hard to turn someone away when they're seeking services. We like that language because we would love the flexibility for weekends, because these are some unknowns for us, right? We're this is probably 1, 2, 3 years out. So depending on what that makeup of volunteer pool on the weekends, you know, and if it's providing an opportunity from 11 to 1 versus that 4 to 5:30, because there's support for it and there's a need for it, we would love that flexibility on the weekend because it doesn't interact with that high school.
Great. Yeah, that's why I was thinking the language might be school days, because that's really the concern. You're not worried about if people want to come and take showers after the turkey trot before Thanksgiving dinner, because you don't have high school kids who are hanging down the campus at that point, and you don't have the concerns that creates for a lot of folks in the neighborhood. I think it's a really good example of how you've been listening to specific concerns that people have brought up, and that there are things we can do to help manage the impact of both homelessness and homeless services in the community in order to help have a good process that gets people off of our streets, out of our neighborhoods, and into stable housing where they can be contributing members of the community.
One thing I'd like to clarify is on the weekends, especially on Sunday, we wouldn't be wanting to do it from 11 to 1. We would also not want to make that extra busy during, we have Tascadero Bible Church down the street and there's a lot of traffic. That was just something that just came out of my head, but we would accommodate to make sure we're working with our neighbors. So not 11 to 1 on a Sunday, but just some of that flexibility. And I also want to, Austin did his presentation without the presentation, so I want to just thank him for that, because we did have a kind of a wonderful PowerPoint that we supplied, so that was very on the cuff, but very thorough.
Right. And then if you could briefly address a couple things. One is any role that the residents have in cleaning and maintaining the tidying up the Echo property and the surrounding area.
This is one of my favorite things to talk about. So all of the residents we assign chores throughout the shelter. And part of the reason that we assign chores is because, one, it helps our residents to take ownership of the facility. Beyond mm-hmm. that, too, something new that we're really excited about is really our residents taking over our commercial kitchen in Atascadero as well, creating an emphasis on workforce development directly into our hospitality industries, too. And so all of the different things that we assign can directly correlate to someone's resume, creating job skills as well. So there's two-fold parts to that that our residents participate in throughout the shelter.
Great, thank you. And then is it safe to assume that that the screening that we talk about, the operating plan is the language is a little dated, but that the screening would involve just staff noticing if somebody's having a mental health issue or behavioral health issues that needs to be addressed for the safety of the community, that would be screened and you would address them?
Absolutely, and that screening has even grown, too, as we as an organization have grown. When this was written originally, PASO wasn't even a forethought in Echo's mind. Now we have another facility that has a very different feel to it. That was, as many of you know, the Atascadero project is a old Baptist church that we inherited, where the current shelter stands is where pews once were, and where the family shelter currently is where classrooms were. And in fact, when the shelter was originally there, that's where our offices are now. And so it's been an interesting just evolution of our organization. And so now that we have PASO, we can do additional screening because we may have a better fit for someone, for a woman that is fleeing a domestic violence situation. Having the ability to go up to PASO and close that door and lock it is something that may be critically important. Also, for someone that may be dealing with some mental health, the ability to have, again, just one roommate, to have that closed door environment may be a better fit for them while they are waiting for other services in our community that can be long-term housing for them open up as well. So that screening has also developed and changed as we as an organization have evolved throughout many years.
Great. Thank you very much.
So it's hard to get used to this mic because you can kind of hear yourself, but then you can't. So I don't want to be too loud. I respect what you guys have to do. It's very challenging to do that. But I know it's also challenging, too, with what you have across the street. You talked about doing outreach to community, and we understand that St. Williams was not in that noticing. Did you guys reach out to the elementary and middle school that's directly across the street and have a one-on-one conversation with them?
With our neighbors in that corridor?
Yes, particularly the elementary and middle school that's directly across on the closed campus.
So I definitely would be open for expanding to the middle school. We have met with school districts in the past and talked about our services. We directly reached out to Atascadero Bible Church, North County Christian, and the high school, but always open to expand that farther out of the corridor of those initial neighbors.
Mostly concerned about North County Christian. They are some of the people that are making the calls, do have the issues with that corridor. Everybody assumes that when kids are out of school, they're not exposed to that environment between 4 to 5:30, but that is an after child care facility. I know that several of the calls of concern of those people and individuals that are residing in the medium has existed for years.
And that is where some of that feedback came about the shower program specifically. So originally when we put this out, they received the notice about the expansion of our shower hours, and one of the concerns that they really put forth that was very heard by ECHO, because when we, as was represented in this, originally when we did that, we wanted to change the hours due to daylight savings time. But after hearing that feedback and about the concern from parents that they heard through that, that is what really initiated us to listen to that feedback and change our perspective and change those hours and solidify that 4 p.m. time for our shower program, because we heard that exact thing. So we wanted to mitigate some of that as much as we could by still having the programs that we offer, but have less of that traffic coming and going with that program.
I know some of the challenges that we had in that corridor, this council tried to put in and did put in a successful smoking corridor or vaping corridor, hoping that some of that would alleviate some of the, you know, interactions that go on there. Being a parent who's had my child in that facility for summer care, you can't walk your children down that side of the road when you park to pick them up without having to explain, don't pick up trash, the drug usage that gets done in that. I know that's not your fault. And I know that we're all dealing with that. But what ends up happening is the individuals that aren't willing to undergo the extensive testing to be in the facility, don't want to conform to being drug-free, are staying there for meals. And it is putting young children in a situation to where they're not understanding that. And so as we extend meals, I think the community's fear is that more people of that nature are going to be the ones that come. In your list of operating, you had listed that you guys put in no loitering signs, no trespassing signs, no camping signs. I understand that's public street, and our police department is hopefully able to come out to less calls as we go along, but as you continue to expand, at what point do we feel that they're utilizing your services? Is there security, or is there something one step further that we can as a community take forward and enforce and uphold them to those standards?
I absolutely think that there's more that we as I think there's a community solution in exactly what you said. I think that there are improvements that we can come together as a community, tapping into our incredible city staff to make that corridor better. The problems that have existed on that corridor on Atascadero Mall have existed from before ECHO. I think that there are traffic issues in general. Just if you look at high school, if you try to leave ECHO Atascadero at 3 p.m. on a Monday, Friday's okay because they early release, but Monday through Thursday, it's a nightmare. I think that there are improvements that we as a community can make to that, and different things, best practices that we can take in from other areas that we can implement and have more further conversations on how to improve that corridor for not just for ECHO and for who we serve, but for everyone that involved through community feedback and implementing different policies on that to give tools to our law enforcement too through their engagement, having more conversations about that opportunity and that strip of land. I think that beyond ECHO, right, I mean, we do our best to engage and have conversations, and we can ask people not to do certain things, and we've even been the ones that have initiated some of the calls, having conversations with the R team and asking them to come out and build some of those relationships, utilizing that as a tool for our community and for our clients as well. But I definitely think that there's an answer in exactly what you say. I don't know what that is. I can't conceptualize that. That's not my expertise, but I would love the opportunity to give input and feedback on a design and a redesign for that corridor that creates a better space for everyone in our community, the high school, the middle school, the elementary school, the church, and all of the residents that are in that area.
I appreciate that. I too have tried to enforce or encourage them to put it out, and have, you know, been told to do a few things myself.
I've heard some speed bumps would be a great idea from some of the members too. I've seen some high school students going way too fast, I'll just say.
Yeah. So my next question would be, with that outreach, as you guys are trying to address it and trying to figure that out, I think one of my colleagues, Mr. Bobo, Councilmember Bobo, had brought up is there a type of enforcement if they do have bad behavior on the medium, they are being visited by the police department, their services are terminated, that they have a behavior and a standard that all of us have to kind of, you know, it coexists together. Because I think some of the people that are repeat offenders and are the ones that are doing heinous crimes are still getting a service, and you don't allow it on your property, I don't think that it's fair that they're allowed to do that on the public property across the street and still receive services. I know that sounds crazy, but I think there's some standards of living within Atascadero that we need to enforce for not only those that are housed, those that are unhoused, and those that want to make a difference in their life.
And I appreciate that feedback. To be honest with you, though, I understand where that feedback is coming from, but I can't think of an example of that currently would affect our shelter specifically. I understand where that's coming from and where the thought process is coming from, but I want to delineate that I don't know how many heinous crimes, I believe was the term a lot that you used, that are currently happening on the median. And I would look to our chief of police. I really truthfully don't believe in my time. Oh. I can't think of an exact example of that.
I'll have the police chief pull his records, but openly doing drugs in front of our young children on that curb is not acceptable behavior for any services.
Thank you.
Are you complete?
Okay. So I have a question. So we're kind of looking at, on average, 25, let's say, people in the meal program who are unsheltered and not residents of ECHO, plus or minus on any given day. But if we go without 40% of 65, it would be 26. I was rounding at 25. And so if I think about some of the complaints I've heard, you know, some of them have to do with trash and, like, the meals that are taken. And, you know, I know from being there, you know, once a week for the last 10 years, we've changed that quite a bit, and not a lot of cartons leave. We have plates that are cleaned and things like that. And when I have served meals, I've noticed that it tends to be people coming who have shelter and are taking the meals back home with them. Do you have any sort of a policy for if you are unhoused, you are staying here to eat, you're not taking it with you?
Correct. So almost every single person that comes for the meal program is, we only hand out plates, silverware, and cups that can be washed. It's part of our workforce development program as well. Unless there is a specific reason that is approved by a case manager, and I don't know, you know, the purviews, it could be different situations based on that individual's needs. That would be the only reason that someone would be approved to take a to-go container. But absolutely, most of the time, that's usually because it's someone that is housed in our community grabbing that meal. But it has to be approved. There has to be, it's not someone that just shows up and says, I need this. It is a conversation, predetermined, approved situation. And I would say on average, it's maybe, I would say, 5 a night that go in that to-go container. If that, it really depends on the individual, the predetermined circumstances, and the situations that are approved by a case manager that individual is working with.
Okay. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about the median and people kind of hanging out. And really, it's a public space. Anybody can hang out there. And then at the same time, we all know when you have people hanging out there and they're smoking and they're waiting for dinner, it just creates an environment that some people in the neighborhood don't like. And I can appreciate that. Is there any opportunity, and maybe this is a conversation with staff at some point, is there an opportunity to you know, kind of work with these individuals that, hey, when you're having a meal, you're not hanging out on the island. You're coming on campus. If you're going to use the smoking area, use the smoking area. You're coming to the tables to eat, and when you're done, you're done. Like, is there a way to have sort of that kind of an agreement with them to facilitate some, you know, maybe better behavior for the neighborhood?
Yeah, so we can definitely have those conversations, and they are ongoing. Some of our work with our team is very similar to that, but because that's public space and there's certain laws around denial of services, that once they're on public space, we really aren't able to deny that service. We can encourage and really encourage, but again, it really is because of laws around these different things that limit us as well as limit the city, limit the police department. That's what we're all kind of struggling with.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Other questions for ECHO?
One other very quickly, pet peeve of mine. I assume that stolen shopping carts are not allowed on the premises?
Correct. Stolen shopping carts are not allowed on the premises.
Thank
but
you.
I won't lie, they do sometimes pop up in our wonderful
I'm going to say I
sure.
see those
Thank
from
you.
Time to time.
Thank you.
and we have just put that into place, so I know we'll be working on that more.
And we're happy to, after public comment, more discussion, we're happy to come up and answer anything else further at that
time. Thank you very much. All right. Are we good to continue, or does anyone need a break before we go to public comment? We good? Okay. So we're going to go ahead and go to public comment. I would love to know how many of you are here just to, with regards to this echo item, one way or the other? Okay, so that's most of you. So what I want to say is if you sent in a letter in favor of, and we have your letter, would you like to raise your hand for me? Just let us know how many. Okay, so it looks like maybe at least a half a dozen of you are the letters that got sent in. What I'm hearing is that we've got, it seems to be almost unanimous that, hey, the expansion of the beds we're all pretty good with. If that's not the case, please let us know. If you're in favor of the expansion of the beds, you can raise your hand and wave, and that's fantastic. You are more than welcome to come up and spend 3 minutes at public comment. We've got a pretty big agenda to get through. This is only the first item. We have many more to go. And so what would be helpful for us is new information, information we haven't heard before. And so if you'd like to give us any information specifically about the meal program, particularly if you're having challenges, and we've talked about those challenges, but you know, we do want to hear from you, but we also don't need to hear the same thing over and over. It's not the most useful thing. So go ahead and say, yep, I'm in favor. You know, raise your hand when someone's up there and let us know. Sound good? All right, I'm kind of getting a vague. So first speaker, come forward. Anyone who does want to speak, go ahead and get lined up so that we move through this quickly, or efficiently, I will say.
Yeah.
Welcome, first speaker. And we'll put the timer, please, on to the screen.
Good evening. I'm Jay DeCoux. I did send a letter, but I'm not going to talk about the stuff in the letter on my comments here tonight. I live at 6705 San Lucia, which is back-to-back to Echo. I applaud all of those of you who come down and volunteer for your 1 hour or 2 hour or 3 hour shifts. You see these people on their best of times because they want something. They want their meal. They want something from you. But I've lived with Echo 24/7, 365 since Echo arrived at its current location. Two sayings came to mind when I heard that they were going for an expansion. One is trying to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound box, and the other is, you build it, they will come. When Echo got this emergency shelter overlay status, I thought we had agreed to notify all parties affected by any changes to the CUP status. And I was told that only people within 300 feet got notice of this hearing. And so, while it might meet the letter of the law, it doesn't really meet the spirit of the agreement I thought we had. St. William's Church, which is within the 300 feet, said they never got noticed. And I think they're one of the largest properties that gets affected by homeless. They're a large property, and a lot of people come over there after their meals and before their meals. But anyway, they had no idea this was happening. We've got a large school in the district, 1,200 students going there every day. When I contacted the district administration, they had no idea that the expansion was coming. I checked with neighbors along the creek, and they had no idea that this expansion was coming. During COVID, we had one particularly bad winter in the neighborhood when St. William's decided to become the warming center. We had numerous calls from our house to the APD, and with one night I had to call five times. It's just too many people in too small an area. They were fed at Echo, and then they wandered over to the church. They had about 2 hours to kill between the opening, the feeding ending, and the opening of the warming center. And by that time, they managed to get drunk or high, and then proceeded to fight and argue all night at the warming center. It didn't get better until the warming center was relocated to other parts of the town. Many students walking to school use the tunnel under US 101, which, when it's raining, gets clogged with the homeless and many of your shopping carts. Yeah. So the feeding program brings the homeless into our neighborhood, and they don't leave. Many of these people, Echo doesn't even allow in their facility because they don't follow the rules. If you expand this feeding program, it'll bring more people staying in the creek, which our water company says has seen a recent rise in bacterial downstream from our... Anyway, I'm in favor of the building project, but please don't expand the feeding program.
Thank you, Mr. DeCoupe. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is John Sanders. My wife and I live at 6790 Santa Ynez. It's right around the corner between Tasker Avenue and San Andres, right below the high school. Our backyard is adjacent to Atascadero Creek, and we have lived there for 37 years. I'm going to skip over a lot of this because I'm going to try and keep it short for you, but and I know I'm going to be in the minority here. My concerns, like they were 10 years ago, are not with the ECHO program, but with the location of the shelter and with the meal program. One thing that I would like to see is a show of hands of all the people here supporting ECHO that live within a half a mile. So we are the ones that have to deal with the people that leave after the meal program. We're the ones that live by the creek and have to deal with them in the creek. Again, as was mentioned by Ms. Newsom, this school, I mean, this shelter is right next to two schools. As she mentioned, I've seen drug deals going down. I've seen people smoking crack out there. We have and have had for 10 years people camping out there for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time. Cars, motorhomes, you name it. I did meet with Wendy and Austin after the Planning Commission meeting. They reached out and we met with them, and I'm the one that was frustrated. I used to go to every meeting twice a year. I met with every CEO. I met with Wendy. We would bring up the same concerns over and over and over and over. Nothing ever got done. We were never heard. So yeah, we quit. I quit. I just gave up. I, like many of my neighbors, have had to spend countless dollars on cameras, alarm systems, etc., to try and protect our property. I don't think that's fair, and I was nothing I would have ever even thought about doing until ECHO moved in. I'm not opposed to ECHO expanding their program. I don't think that it's a bad thing. I think it's in a bad place, and I think it's only going to get worse for our neighborhood.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. Welcome to our next speaker.
A short one. I appreciate it. My name is Daniel Reich. I live on Santa Ynez Avenue as well with my wife. We've owned our home for 30 years now. And I think we're all up to date on the history, and I appreciate the interactions you've had, so I'll try to skip some of those things that I tried to fit in my 3 minutes. But I'll go right to 2019, increasing the number of beds.
Could you get right into the microphone?
Sure.
Thank you.
How's this? Okay. Increasing the number of beds. Staff in the original ordinance, working with consultants, recommended 50 beds maximum for this site and any future site for homeless shelters. And I think that's important. 50 beds max. It wasn't dependent on the ability to increase more square feet. It was 50 beds maximum for any homeless shelter site. Obviously, in 2019, the council approved an increase in that. Now we're talking about a tremendous increase, 90 beds, 100 meals. Like John has said, you give up. In my opinion, it's just another slap in the face to the neighbors who have had to deal with the negative byproducts of ECHO's programs and services. trash and personal belongings beyond belief, drug paraphernalia, theft, property destruction, and human waste along Atascadero Creek. So my questions or suggestions for tonight are the first one, how are the rules being enforced? It's apparently self-enforcement, and I think it's pretty weak. And here's a good example. There is a no-smoking policy on the property, and I believe, Mayor, that you just mentioned the smoking area. How can you have both? Every day I see people smoking on there. The shower situation was explained, and I appreciate that, so I won't ask my questions about that. But the neighborhood meetings, are they still being held? I haven't had my notification in years. And again, it went from two meetings a year to one meeting a year. It's going backwards for the neighborhood instead of forward. So my suggestion at this point in time is to pause and step back and try to decrease the impacts on the neighborhood instead of increase them. ECHO can limit the meal program to overnight shelter clients only. That alone would make a significant difference in the neighborhood issues. ECHO can do better to enforce their own policies proactively, not by complaint. And the city can do a lot more to enforce the camping and storage of personal property chapter. It developed just last year. It is supposedly able to stand up in court and effective. The city has tools to keep these areas clear, but I'm not seeing the effort. The chief spoke about some self-initiated stops or whatever you might call them. That's what we need more of. We need more pressure on the people that are causing these offenses.
Thank you, sir.
So please help our neighborhood. Thank you.
Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Babette Takou. First, I have the utmost respect and admiration for the ECHO staff and for the cadre of volunteers who support their work. As the neighbor that directly borders ECHO, we support the construction of the additional building which will better serve ECHO client families. Our issue is with the expansion of the meal program due to the impact of increasing the number of unhoused people in one small neighborhood. The increase in the meal program is for non-clients. While ECHO does its best to police the trash and behavior of non-clients during the meal program, ECHO cannot be held responsible for housing for the unhoused people living in the neighborhood, even though the unhoused people are living there for the services provided to them by ECHO. We are asking that the city, not ECHO, develop a plan of support for this neighborhood prior to approving increases to the meal plan and the conditional use permit. It will not impact ECHO's current or future operations to table this one change until there's the opportunity for city staff to meet with ECHO staff, the schools, churches, businesses, and neighbors to identify key issues and potential solutions and support. If you approve this amendment with no plan of support for the neighbors interacting with increased numbers of unhoused people, then you're saying to us that it is our responsibility to mitigate the impacts of your decision. It was said at the Planning Commission that homelessness is not ECHO's problem. It is everybody's problem. But I'm going to tell you, if you do not drive home tonight and look in your bushes and on your property for somebody living there, or you haven't cleaned up human feces and waste, or you've not had to call the police because of an unhoused person's behavior, then it hasn't been your personal problem. If we want solutions to homelessness and its impact, we need to have everybody at the table and looking for long and short-term solutions, which cannot be done in a three-minute public comment. Everyone's problems have to have everyone involved in the solution. I am asking you to temporarily table the meal expansion of the conditional use permit and direct city staff to engage with the neighborhood to develop a meaningful support plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Takou. Welcome to our next speaker.
My name is Mike Zappas. I'm an Atascadero resident, and I just want to say a few items. First of all, I think that the system that's in place now to deal with unhoused people is really working well. I've seen vast improvements. I think the police department is especially doing a great job with the social workers that go out with them. They seem to know all the homeless people that I encounter by name. which is the first step to creating a solution. So that's a big kudo. But I want to encourage the city to tap the state. I understand that there's a tremendous amount of funds at the state level that cities are just not using, that needs to be used. And I would encourage the city to join with ECHO and expand the facility. If we have 200 people that are standing by that want to be housed that cannot be because it's not big enough facility, work on the facility, make it more efficient within it to house more people. And lastly, I'd like to say that Atascadero Creek is a ticking time bomb. We don't want another paradise. There's so much fuel in that creek, we have to have a way of moving those people out of the creek area, not only for the water safety, but also for fire. If anyone was here during the 41 fire, it was a nightmare. And that's right down through the heart of our community, and we really need to address that. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Zappas. Welcome to our next speaker.
Hello, my name is Kelly Hadley. I live at 6455 Santa Lucia, which is directly across from the Catholic Church and less than three blocks from ECHO. And I live in that beautiful apartment because of ECHO, because 2.5 years ago, perfect storm happened in my life and I was homeless. So I can say the meal program is very, very important. And I can say that firsthand because as I progressed through the program, originally I could only do Instacart and all those things that didn't have a schedule because of, you know, showering and getting yourself together is a crucial part. I mean, you have to have that stable home to put all the other pieces together. So I got a regular job during the program time, and during the meal time towards the end, I watched as everybody sat, either housed people or unhoused people, and that's where the resources came out, and that's where the trust came in, and that's where relationships were made, and it was a beautiful thing. I mean, from myself being able to get unhoused people that weren't in the program, coaxed a couple people into, hey, you know what, you need this. And then as I was able to be in management and being able to hire people in that position within that first year, getting those people jobs, and there's some of them are still there today. And at one point, one of the girls that had children there in ECHO, she worked at the place where I would send the people for their drug testing to come work where I worked. So the three of us were all just like, it was a beautiful thing, and it is a beautiful thing. And I've since moved on, and it's all enabled me. I'm now going to be a U.S. officer for Department of Homeland Security now. So I've come a long ways, and I am appreciative of ECHO. And I don't see a lot of trash out there. I don't. I don't even get to volunteer a lot because they have so many volunteers. They don't normally need me. If I get a shout out, by the time I send the response back, somebody's already taken that spot. So there are people in place. When I go monitor, the first thing I do is, it's not just that area there. We have trash collectors on the sticks that you pick it up. And I also go to meetings over at ABC Church. I don't see a lot of trash there. I don't. And I live right there, and I'm out walking a lot. I don't. Maybe that's a thing of the past, but, I mean, if it's out there during that time, there's so many people, so many volunteers, it's picked up before everything's said and done. And it's pretty organized. I don't see any riffraff or anything. The people that I do see are people that are... I don't see them at the meal program. The people that live in the creek right there, I don't see them there.
Thank you.
I don't see them come and eat. They're
Thank
afraid.
You.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to our next speaker.
Hi, my name is Lori Ferguson. I'm an Atascadero resident, and I am a small business owner downtown on Entrada, which is our lovely downtown business core. My kids, I have three kids. One is graduated, two are still at Atascadero High, and all of them would walk from Atascadero High to my office after school or somewhere downtown to see friends.
And they all have told me how concerned they are with the safety of that corridor. But at the same time at dinner tonight, they all said ECHO absolutely needs to expand the shelter services, meals, and showers. And they said to me, how can you become a productive member of society if you cannot have food and shelter and be clean? How can you get a job if you haven't had a shower? And these kinds of services are exactly what I would have needed when I was 15 and homeless with my mother. And we had to scrape by and try and have housing that was unfortunately very unsafe. And having something like this available would have made a big difference in my grades, in my mental health, in my safety. And luckily, I was able to become a productive member of society. I am a small business owner, like I said. I'm a psychologist. Big surprise. And so I really appreciate the comment about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's definitely true. If you don't have safety, then you can't have the ability to contribute to society, pay taxes, vote, volunteer in the community. So I think that there is a solution here, and it's, as has been mentioned, it's for ECHO, as well as the community, as well as the police, as well as the city council. We all need to come together to make a solution so that we can have a safe area for our students, for the schools across the way. I really appreciate Councilmember Newsom's comments about that corridor area, and to continue to provide the services that are so necessary for our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ferguson. Welcome.
Good evening, council members. My name is Linda Velch. I'm the Deputy Director for Homeless Services here in San Luis Obispo County. And I support the ECHO's expansion. Very grateful to hear the expansion of beds will be likely approved and hearing the concerns with meal programs. I just needed to comment. On average in homeless services, it takes between 17 and 25 positive contacts with our community in order for unsheltered individuals to accept services. 17 to 25 times for our community to be reminded that we see them in their humanity, that we care about them being clean and fed, for them to begin to trust in order to come into those services and to want to take that first step in a very difficult journey. When I'm part of these conversations, I'm often reminded that those of us in this room have so many privileges. I get to go home to a warm home and a full fridge and a meal waiting for me. And what we're talking about tonight is providing 20 additional meals to a community who desperately needs to be reminded that we have not forgotten them. Nobody in this room is going to forget or undermine any of the concerns that are being legitimately raised. But the question that I would ask is the right tool to address those concerns to make providing services more difficult or complicated for them to be able to access what they need? Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor Moreno and the Atascadero Council members. You are tackling the toughest issue. I'm sorry, I'm Biz Steinberg. I work at CAPSLO. We're a partner with ECHO and Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We're pleased to have Mr. Darris on our board representing your city. So he's been through some of this with us, with 40 Prado and our expansion for families. I urge you, you have such a wonderful resource in your police department, working with ECHO staff and volunteers. I know this is all hard. I have been through the mill about homelessness. I came here in 87 when we at CAPSLO had our first homeless families losing their apartments in Atascadero, and guess where we went to do home visits? The Santa Margarita campground. So that's how far back I go. And through the Maxine Lewis shelter, through our partnerships with the county and the cities, and you as policymakers, we need your direction. I, like Linda, and the young lady who shared the experience she had coming through the ECHO program. For me, on the now we've got sometimes with Warming Center 155 people at 40 Prado, and it's every square inch. COVID taught us a lot, all of us a lot. And it showed us the increased need that families have. You have a divorce or a medical issue. Your children, you want the best for them. So COVID showed us a new reality that was just continuing to just be worse than in the past, I think. But the 20 meals, what I was going to use the 17 that Linda did, my team of case managers, they can count on in our notes how it does take. It could take from that first welcome for a lunch to start building trust and be ready to make that change to become self-sufficient that all of you want in your community here. So I have seen it work. I mean, we have housed hundreds of people, but we work on a countywide basis. So I want you to know Atascadero's not alone. That's why we're here. We want to be supportive. We want to support Austin and Wendy and their board as well as you as your city council. So I appreciate the deliberations, and I really urge approval of the expanded family shelter as well as the 20 meals. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Biz. Welcome to our next speaker.
Good evening. Tom O'Malley. I've had a few different jobs working around our county for the last 74 years. I started young. Anyway, when I was younger, I was the administrator at County Mental Health Department. I also did 5 years with the County Sheriff's Department, where I was the crime analyst, computer guy. But as administrator, and was, you know, went through the ranks as a mental health therapist. But as the administrator, one of the jobs I had was supervising the very beginning of the homeless outreach program by the county. We had a half-time person it started with, but imagine that, dealing with the problems countywide. Anyway, one thing I did learn is that the state of California is challenging to work with. I think a lot of folks at the local level do a pretty good job with the hand they're dealt, but there's a lot of rules that you can't get there from here. We won't go into that. That's another problem. But what I did learn is our city, with the ECHO program, has probably the most cost-effective program at one time in the state, looking at and nationally. Very good program. And I think you have to consider what happens if you don't have such a program. And I've seen that, you know, statewide comparing to other systems. So I think we need to keep working with what we have. I do think there's some opportunities partnering with the city a little bit more. But I'd keep that in mind. Well, leaving the administrative mental health department, how mentally healthy could I be? I ran for city council, was on city council up there as former mayor for 18 years, I lost track. But anyway, I love going around the state bragging about ECHO because, quite frankly, it was one of the best programs in the state. And had an opportunity with Mayor Martin. We would often spend the nights up there as chaperones, get to meet folks, and being in the community. I loved running into folks that were success stories and actually come up and talk to you in the community. But more recently, well, actually before I was even on council, 20-plus years with Kiwanis, providing meals regularly. We've worked with folks in the community, and again, it was heartwarming to see probably the politest group of folks eating food in our community, because I've been to some of our restaurants, I think that has been, the folks that we've seen over the years, number you Kiwanians and Rotarians now and then, volunteering out there, you've seen the clientele, and you know the folks we are working with locally as a community, they are part of us. They are folks that live here for the most part. So I would just encourage you to consider how we can work as a community together. Those of us who are a little better off.
Thank
you, Mr.
Romo.
We want to help those that aren't.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Hayes.
Good afternoon. Council, thank you for having me. My name is Andrew Hayes. I live at 7975 San Marcos. I raised my hand that I'm within the half-mile radius as I get older and walk down there. I think it's getting longer. I might be wrong. but at any rate, I'm also on the board for ECHO. And, you know, a famous humanitarian once said, the measure of a society is how it treats its most vulnerable. We have vulnerable children trying to go to school. We have vulnerable neighbors that are dealing with a difficult situation. We have vulnerable people that are unhoused. And I guess the way I would put it, it's a difficult decision. We wish we had a place that couldn't possibly impact anyone negatively. That's not an option right now. We have a homelessness issue, and rather than ignoring it, that perhaps 20 years ago happened, we have to have a plan. This is the best plan we have. I think you should take seriously, consider Austin's words that people who have the courage that are in that situation to reach out to ECHO need to be listened to and heard. And I really think if they're not listening to anyone else and need people to trust, they should come down for a meal and talk. And I think we've got a real chance to better our community by figuring out what they need. It's a lot better than our alternative. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Welcome, next speaker.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Kara Woodruff. I'm the district director for Senator John Laird, who represents all of San Luis Obispo County, including Atascadero. And 4 years ago, when he was first elected in a district that has a million people, he picked one nonprofit of the year for the 17th Senate District, and that was ECHO. So I think that tells you what someone who has spends most of her time in Sacramento thinks about this organization. It's so highly valued, and he also wishes just to say thank you so much to all of you for your really long-standing support of ECHO operations. It's why they've been so successful, and just to remind you, just this year alone, 288 people have now have stable housing. That's 288 people that are not out on the streets and in the community, but actually have a place to sleep every night. So it's pretty phenomenal. The other hat I wear tonight, in addition to representing Senator Laird, is I'm on the board of ECHO, and it's truly an honor to be a part of that organization. I want to say a quick word about the family unit. As a member of the board and a frequent volunteer, I frequently see the children that are staying at the shelter, and imagine how intimidating that would be to live in a place surrounded by strangers. And the ECHO staff and their caseworkers are so warm and so loving and caring of the young people. But you can imagine the value that a family unit brings, so that when you're at the shelter and you're a young person, you're with other young people, you're with other parents, it's just such a better setup than to have them mixed with every other person that's there at the shelter. So just a really wonderful program that hopefully will come to fruition. One other comment is about the meal program. I know that's a topic of great discussion. I volunteer occasionally to serve meals in both Atascadero and Paso Robles. And the reason I keep going back is that it's incredibly rewarding. What I witness is people showing up, they check in with a caseworker, they go through some kind of filtering. Pretty much everybody gets through that I've ever seen. When they show up, they're given a plate, utensils, not disposable, regular old silverware and plates. They stand in line, the children, the seniors, middle-aged people. They get their meals, they sit down together, they talk together. They communicate with each other, which is a support system. They communicate with staff. And then often they sit around and talk and communicate with one another. And if you think, for someone who's on the street a lot, to have someone you can communicate to in a safe, warm environment is so meaningful. A lot of people then stay to the end, because at the end of the night, if no one else